This is Famudu Don Moyer from Art Ensemble of Chicago. I am living in Marseille, France.
Where it's about 40 degrees and you're chopping wood.
Maybe even 45, trying to stay ahead of the game.
So how are you feeling these days? I mean, you sound great and you're chopping wood. Is life just wonderful or what's happening?
Yeah, I have no complaints. Just get up every day and handle my business, you know, stay focused. Do my practices, attend to my students, and life goes on.
What are your practices?
The same stuff I've been struggling with for the last 55 years. Every musician has his foils and foibles. You know, roles, rudiments, timing, dynamics, enthusiasm, focus, and endurance, all of this stuff. It pretty much applies to every instrument.
Well, you've definitely endured, and that's evidenced by the new box set that's out on the ECM Records, the Art Ensemble and Associated Ensembles. It's just an amazing collection. Have you had a chance to sort of look at that and soak that thing up?
Yeah, we dealt with it right from the beginning, when they initially put the thing together. And then there was a prelude to that when we had the 5-CD set some years ago. So, yeah, I thought they brought it to us tonight when it came out. We were in Warsaw, Poland on the 28th of October. ECM rep showed up with the box set. Yeah, it is impressive.
When you look back at it and listen to it, are there any recordings that just stand out for you, either musically, emotionally?
Nice Guys, that was the first one. So that was like, a really... I would say an event end of one cycle at the beginning of another, because we were going further into our large scale touring logistics and stuff. And ECM had a lot of support for that tour support. And we had roadies and all of that. And then the recording situation was pretty good. So that one, the first one, Nice Guys, and then the one Full Force. I always think back on that one because that was when we did that long tour in the States actually all of them have a little story. So the good part about it is there was enough time between each release to develop new music and feel like the band was progressing to another level. So any one of those in and of themselves have represents a certain milestone for me.
Yeah, and I just listened to both those records last weekend and really cranked them up. They sound fabulous, and they sound fresh. They don't sound like, hey, this was, decades ago. They sound really fresh, like they could have been released last week. Why do you think that music endures so well?
Ancient to the future. No, I noticed that. I was in the studio a couple of months ago doing the mix for the next record that we got coming out on Pyre Recordings, and they put on, the guy was asking me, what kind of levels do you like? And I said, I have to see where you're at. And so they put on a recording of Les Chants à Sophie, which incidentally was the first recording I made with the Art Ensemble in December 69, January 1970. And the sound on that one is pretty damn good too. I mean, clean, clear. And then, aside from that, in addition to that, I like the music sounded fresh because I don't listen to my stuff that much occasionally, but not a whole lot. It really was surprising to me how some of the improvised sections were really clear, relative current. They weren't, dated or anything like that, So that took me back on a time memory trail that was pretty interesting.
When you're out touring now, what do you think makes a great performance? What makes a great Art Ensemble live show?
Just having all the elements in place and then having a good vibe and just being in focus, we stay in focus pretty well all the time because that's what it, just like most people that been performing together a long time. They know what it takes to be on point. So what it takes, us being in focus, and then now that we're using different people, special guests and everything, making sure they're all in focus, making sure everybody's relaxed, making sure we don't do no dumb shit from lessons that we learned years ago about, you know, all the tricks about traveling. There are certain rules that apply. The game is the same, only the players have changed.
You've been to Knoxville before, and you're coming to Knoxville.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember that by any chance? I know it's like one of many shows.
1980.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
You are correct.
That was during our Full Force tour. We did 50 concerts in 60 days.
Yeah, that was an amazing tour. What's it like to be a roadie for the Art Ensemble Chicago? Because, you know, when you walk out and you see that stage, there must be hundreds of pieces of gear and instruments.
Well, we trained them, and we used to do all that all ourselves, so I know exactly what it's like. I don't know what it's like. I don't know what they feel like that they could imagine to have to drive, set up the stuff, play the concert, take it back down, and drive somewhere else. But as far as the physical, mental activity of being a roadie, I know exactly what that is, because we were roadieing for ourselves until we got our first full crew in 1977. So for me, that was the first 7 years. And fortunately, we had bought a Greyhound bus in 1972, an old 1951 Greyhound, so we could consolidate all the equipment into one vehicle as opposed to what we were doing before with three vehicles. So we had all the equipment in one vehicle. That means the drivers could do four-hour shifts and not have to, you know, and then go relax. So we went through all of that. Then we said, okay, we beat the odds this far. No point in taking any risks. It's time to upgrade the whole production, get the roadies, get the flight cases, you know, look at different vehicles, you know, start, you know, doing this on a higher level. That's my memory to this day of that whole cycle of events.
In the current lineup of Art Ensemble of Chicago, is Tamika Reed still playing with you?
Yeah, when she's available. Yeah. Also, Nicole Mitchell. There's a lot of people. There's 15 people. So it's on most occasions, they're available, but all these people, they're in demand too. So we always try to give people good time in advance and make it something that'll be worth their while, where they can continue to fulfill their commitment to us and to their own projects. So we've been having trouble with visas, because in the past when we had foreign, we performed with the musicians from South Africa. We perform musicians from West Africa and European musicians traveling around with us now with all of the new world order of all this thing about, you know, terrorism and all that. It affects the timing and the cost and the whole procedure for getting foreign visas for artists to travel with us. That's the biggest problem we've been having now. In terms of maintaining the personnel that we getting the people that we like to have when they're available, because with Dudu Kwate from Senegal, we had two attempts to get him a visa to come to Knoxville. We would have had to do that 6 months in advance, and then it's just $3,000 to $4,000 fee just for a visa. And then Sylvia, the bass player, with us. From Italy, she got her the same visa, but it's expensive and it's time consuming and it's a lot of paperwork. That's one of the downsides of the new world order as far as travel and security and all of that, the whole politics, international politics and all of that.
One of the things I notice when I travel abroad is that I look back at the United States and sometimes I can see it more clearly when I get out of it. I'm wondering, you being an expat and being out of the United States for so long, does that give you an interesting perspective on how the United States looks now, particularly with all this division and tension going on?
Yeah, hell yeah. Well, I mean, my best perspective on all of this whole thing is, you know, it amazes me how the the presumably richest country in the world on paper still doesn't have universal health care, you know, because like here in France, what I have my insurance and I pay extra money for, it's called a mutual, where you can add money to get a higher grade of service. But basically everybody in France has universal health care. And then with France and Canada, I think are the number one and number two best insurance programs, health insurance programs in the world. That's only tempered by the reality. France is like 65 million people. The States is like 360 million. So, you know, 6-7 times more, but still the gross national product and all the profit and all the money and all the things involved in the States, they should be able to figure out a way to everybody has, you know, access to health care without, you know. And then it's the same thing in regards to medicine, public transport, you know, services and everything. The States is falling behind compared to like Japan. And well, Japan is like 130 million people, but still the level of the whole public service sector is much more civilized, humane.
I was going to ask you about Joseph Jarman. He just passed away, and a longtime member and collaborator with you. I mean, you made some, even a duo record with him. What are your memories of him?
Oh, we made a lot of records, duos, trios, quartets, quintets. My memory, you know, from the first, I met Joseph in 1966, along at the same period that I met Roscoe and Lester and Malachi. I was in Detroit, in school in Detroit. They came through there. And pretty much the same aesthetic, the same level of focus and concentration, because the thing that impressed me most then and even now is the commitment to practicing every day and working on your things and working on composition, studying, focusing, concentrating. So Jarman, inside of all of the different pursuits that he had, he was always focused, highly focused. I would have to say that at a certain point, the requirements of his vision about his life, he had to step away from music because he was more committed to the Buddhism and his martial arts and all that. So he took some time off to resolve those, not conflicts, just those, that vision he had. But throughout the whole time I worked with him, until he really wasn't really performing anymore, he pretty much maintained a similar level of focus in his life work.
I was listening recently to the album, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly, Egwu Onwu.
So yeah.
That double live album. That is an intense and wonderful experience. Do you have any memories of that recording?
Sure. Yeah, we did that up in Woodstock, New York. Yeah, that was a culmination of our duo projects around Chicago, and then when the Art Ensemble was touring, we toured as a duo from like the mid-70s to maybe 3 or 4 years as a duo, and that album came out of that. And then the next projects we did trios with Don Pullen, We did another trio series with Johnny Deoning, the South African bass player. Then we had quartet recordings with Craig Harris and Raphael Garrett. Then we had quite a few projects. But anyway, that the Eguan was the first. After I produced the solo records, which I did Sun Song, Sun Percussion, and he did Sun Song. The next progression for us was the duo thing, which evolved out of our playing around Chicago in duo, and when the art ensemble wasn't working.
When you say you play Sun Percussion, what does that mean exactly?
I was a member of a group called the Sun Drummers, who actually is a collective of a group founded by a master drummer, Harold Atu Murray from Chicago. And the Sun drummer singing it, because it was like the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. So I said, actually, Sun, my extension of what I'm doing is Sun Percussion, because it encompasses, I added the drum set and hand percussion and bells and everything to my repertoire. And then Max Roach said that the drum set was multiple percussion, like not called a drum set. So I said, well, I'm a Sun drummer that's playing multiple percussion. So I think I feel like the title for this ought to be Sun Percussion. So that's how that evolved.
You know, one of the things I've been noticing, I've been going back and listening to a lot of your work and with the trios and the duos and the art ensemble. It just sounds so exciting to me, and I think a lot of that's because so much of today's recorded music is done with computers and Pro Tools, where they go back and like make every single thing just perfect, just so. Is that your experience? Is that why you like playing music the way you play it?
That's a big question. to not risk stepping on anybody's toes and saying what I really think. I would just say that I'm old school in the approach to, I like playing live music with human beings, you know. And then, but lately I've been, we have an artist with us now, Christina Wheeler, that has her, her gadgets and her programs. So we're able to integrate that into our acoustic structures. And we're working on it. I'm getting closer, but as far as committing to that totally, I have a problem. I have a problem with people that don't actually play the instrument itself. They're using a program or something. So I guess in that context, the computer becomes the instrument. But of course, whatever the brain does to manipulate it. But that's all of that shit is over my head. I just get up every day and hit the drums and touch my instruments and then, see what happens next. Is that vague enough for you?
Yes, perfectly vague. Early in the interview, you said, one of the things you try to maintain, when you're practicing is your enthusiasm. You're 72 years old, is that correct?
Yes.
How have you maintained that enthusiasm? Because I can hear it in your voice. I can hear it in your playing. You're obviously making a new record. How do you keep that enthusiasm so high?
My students. So I get all the stuff I don't feel like doing when the students come over. That gives me inspired to get, to go to stay on the path, don't waver. And the students, I feed off of their enthusiasm. I start out enthusiastic, but it's a whole lot easier, especially the little ones. But all of them, I get a lot of feedback from my students, so that kind of keeps me focused. But still, everybody, like Roscoe, is still doing the same exercises that I've been hearing him do for more than 50 years. Then when he used to stay at my house, different people stayed at different people's houses on the road or before rehearsals, he had the same routine. He'd get up, he'd start with the flute and the piccolo, then he would go to the clarinet, then he would go to the alto saxophone. And then at those days, he had his bass sax. Whatever instruments he had a cycle of going through all his instruments, which I hear elements of that to this day, even though he doesn't travel with all his horns. And then I have my cycle of enthusiasm, focus, because I start out with the bells and the shaker bays, and then I might go to the bongos and the hand drums, and then I have to go to the stick drums and then to the drum set, and then I might end up on the mallets, just, you know, because that's an instrument that I had kind of gotten away from, so I was starting to work on my marimba stuff again. Not to play publicly, just to meet the challenge of not having done it and have more, some more rhythmic elements in my practice routines.
Well, Famadou Damoye, we are so excited that you're coming back to Knoxville after many decades and playing at the Big Ears Festival, and we really look forward to seeing you perform.
All right. That was a good interview.
Well, thank you.
I mean, you asked good questions. Thank you.
Well, I'm a long-time listener, and I hope to be an even longer-time listener.
All right. I'll bring a few CDs for you when I get there that I'm sure you don't have.
Oh, now I got a reason to live.
Okay, man.
All right. Take care. We'll see you in Knoxville. You won't have to chop any firewood here, I promise.
All right. Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.